This is the Skies Blue podcast.
Well, hello, everybody.
It's Sky is Blue podcast again, and perhaps we were thinking it might be an end of the season one, but well, we've got at least one more match to talk about with me, Phil Tooley, Stuart Basson, Paul Fisher and Daryl Carpenter, after Chesterfield did the business after a little bit of a wobble, wasn't there, around those Hartlepool and Torquay defeats, but then a bit of a rallying call, Wealdstone apart. Of course, we could always argue that the 1 point gained against Wealdstone got Chesterfield into the playoffs, couldn't we? So it's a playoff special, and where we've been, and we'll be talking about all the injuries that have been coming our way, and the looking forward, of course, to Meadow Lane on Saturday at 4 o'clock. Not very often we kick off at 4 o'clock, is it? So first of all, the season's end at Halifax, Stuart. It was nervy. It wasn't the best Chesterfield played all season, but my word, it was an enjoyable afternoon, wasn't it?
It certainly was, Phil, yes. I thought we reasonably well controlled it. There was a spell in the second half, wasn't there, after we sort of presented them with their equaliser, where they looked a bit lively down our left, more than anywhere else. But obviously, the manager made the change at half-time, and that sort of stitched that hole in our defence up. And after that, I thought we were fairly comfortable. I think it would have been a bit rough on us if we hadn't have gone on to win, really.
And, you know, Liam Mandeville, Paul, probably one of the players who splits opinion more than the most, with the first goal, a header no less, and an Old Trafford reminiscent Andy Morris tapping for old Mr. Tyson. to score. So well done, Liam Mandeville as well.
Yeah, I'm pleased for Liam Mandeville as well, you know. So he's obviously, the manager's got him in his thinkings. He still says he's young at 24, and I don't think I've ever been was young at 24, but you know, there was he's obviously still in his thoughts. I don't know whether he's oohing and aahing over whether for a contract or not, but he keeps playing in, doesn't he? And he's coming up with the goods on more often than not now. That's two vital goals, one at Eastleigh and one there at Halifax as well. So that's very impressive. And how good is it we can bring on a 39-year-old who doesn't actually play like a 39-year-old, does he? He's a spring chicken, isn't he, Nathan Tyson, being Johnny on the spot there, just put the ball in the back of the net. So I don't know whether it was going to go in or not. I'm not too sure whether we can see that replay or not. I'm not too sure. No, but decent ball in.
The position that I was at, which was inside the function room, quite near that end, we were in the perfect angle to see it. And no, it would have gone beyond the far post. But it was a lovely piece of play from Mandeville. And those tap-ins, you still have to be there, don't you? You have to be.
Yeah.
You know, Scott Bowden being there, and it's the anticipation, and it's the gambling to get there. And there were big shouts for offside, which, you know, when you've seen the angle from the side that Mandeville was on, as opposed to the angle from the other side, he clearly stepped up and was clearly onside. There was a guy inside the 6-yard box, and Tyson, when the ball was played, was on the edge of the 6-yard box. So yeah, there was no question about that, regardless of what Pete Wilde sort of said. And of course, all things being equal, if Tyson appears on Saturday at Notts County, he won't even be the oldest man on the pitch, because Michael Doyle is a few months older than him for Notts County. So he'll be the silver medal spring chicken, won't he?
And if Tyson does play, he'll be playing against his former club as well, won't he, that Chesterfield got him from. So yeah,
absolutely right. And Daryl, you know, at the time that Danny Rowe, who was the previous week's hero, went off, which we subsequently found out was illness, which was a relief to all concerned. And Tyson had to come on. He'd got best part of an hour to play, and it was looking a little bit tougher at that point than it had been doing 5 minutes earlier, wasn't it?
Well, exactly right. Because as Stuart said, I felt we were in control until inexplicably, for a man who's been playing very well, but I thought had a fairly awful first half, but he proved after getting the manager's wrath at half-time, Manny, who inexplicably, when Taylor showed the guy inside, just let the ball run past him. It was bizarre. And talking of offsides, which ours wasn't, but you could argue that the guy that ran across the front of Montgomery when the kid had the shot from the edge of the box was definitely interfering with play and was offside. But anyway, we digress. We got what we wanted. I thought Tyson was exceptional when he came on. Led the line. He gives us something other players doubt, that we can stretch teams. You've never got a lost cause with him either. And the intelligence of the run, Phil, I think you mentioned for the goal. Yeah, it's a tapping. It's only a tapping because he's made a movement away from the goal, taken the defender with him, and gone in ahead of the near post and in front of the defender, which very few players at that level have the nous or the ability to do. So he's a very handy operator to have on your bench, and we might be very grateful of him in the next few years.
And Darrell, coming up against the likes of Mayer and Byrne and Clark at the back for Halifax, who are very, very good at keeping a shutout, keeping a clean sheet, you sometimes need that bit of nous to overcome that. How many times has Nathan Clark been the man of the match against us in recent years? Despite the fact that a lot of Halifax fans think he's past his best, but he never is when he plays us.
No, he always has a good game, doesn't he? I think the other person to mention, and I only noticed when I looked again at the highlights, was what a big part in the goal Lawrence Maguire played.
Yes.
And he made the kind of run he'd made earlier in the season from left centre-back to almost right inside right, old-fashioned inside right, to lay the ball off to Mandeville. He's been very good, Lawrence. I think it's his best season.
Yeah, he has, and there's no question that playing that left side of a three when you've got a destroyer in the middle, Stuart, whether that's Hollis, the way he's played this season, or Gunning, just perhaps gives him that little bit more confidence to be able to travel with the ball as in the goal that Daz has just described.
Absolutely. If you know that someone's got your back, you know, that sort of frees your mind a bit, doesn't it, I suppose? And he's done that a few times this season, hasn't he? Just sort of gone buccaneering forwards, you know, like old Steve Blatherwick, bless him, used to do once a game, you know? And as Darrell says, very effective on Saturday, and instrumental in that third goal. I don't know if it's possible for there to be two assists, but, you know, Maguire should have got one as much as Mandeville did for Tyson's goal, certainly.
And I'm sure we'll come on to Mad Gav in a little while, Paul, but Will Evans, out in the cold, nobody's seen him for week after week after week, comes back in, whether there's been anything going on behind the scenes or what, he's shown what a professional he is, and that right side of the three is his position, because the one game he did play when Gunning and Hollis were both absent, it wasn't the same Will Evans, was it?
No, I think the word that you used there was professionalism, isn't it, about him, what a professional he is, to be out in the cold for a while, you know, really out of the manager's plans. You know, there were other players getting games ahead of him, for him to just slot back in, and he's only in because of injuries. You know, and to play like he has done, and, you know, not sort of throw a strop or anything on the field. You know, he doesn't look that way or anything. You don't know what's going off behind the scenes, of course. He's also playing for a contract, isn't it? Because it's it's up at the end of the season. So in to come in and play, and then to slot into that three, in place of Fraser Kerr and in place of Yarny, gives him a lot of credit, in my opinion, as well. And I know, again, he's another Marmite player in the squad, isn't he, Evans? But when Rowe spotted straight away to put him to the right-hand side of the three, it helped him, and he's develop, and he played, and he's played well the last few games, and, you know, it's as if he's never been away, to be honest, Phil.
No, absolutely. He it's a credit to himself how he's come back into the mix. But of course, the man at the moment at the back, Daz, is your man Mad Gav, who just seems to have been the type of centre half that we've not had for as long as I can remember. We had that spell of Hollis until he picked up his nasty Achilles injury, but I'd struggle to think of the last person.
Laurie Mad.
Yeah, okay.
He was Mad as well.
Yeah, well, that was his name, wasn't it, really?
He was, he was very forgetful in the press box, Phil, as well, wasn't he? So yeah. I remember that as well when he turned to the press corps.
But that level of just absolutely brick wall scenario, you know, it's back to your Nicky Laws and Blatherwicky type of things from a Chesterfield perspective, isn't he? Just how much of a difference as he made, because of course when he was playing in midfield at Notts County and scored the winning goal, it was a what on earth are we playing him in midfield for?
Yeah, he's just a born winner. He's slightly mad. In fact, he's probably very mad. I think we've all seen the kicking Virgil van Dijk in the Kahunas, picking the ball up, walking off the pitch for no reason, and loads of them getting sent off in playoffs and all sorts, but. He's clearly a leader. I think the other players respect him, but they're also scared to bloody death of him.
Yes.
Probably more so than they are in James Rowe. And he never stops talking, does he? I mean, he's constantly on at people. And if you drop below what he considers to be a standard, giving a ball away or doing something daft, he just goes ballistic. And that has to affect everybody around you. We haven't had anybody like that for donkey. I can't even remember who was that player ever in that mold.
Go on, sorry.
Yeah, go on, Stu.
I was going to say, I spent as much of the Dagenham game after he picked up his injury watching him as I did of watching the ball.
Yeah.
And towards the end of it, after he'd gone down for the second time and got up again, he was marshalling Jack McCourt to kind of stand close to him so that if he needed anybody to do any legwork, he was telling McCourt to go and fetch the ball and do this and kick him and all that sort of thing, you know. And it was educational to watch.
Armband, it gave Lawrence Maguire the armband on that day because he was going to go off and then he changed his mind and got it back.
Yeah. Fantastic to watch, though.
Yeah, Whittle's struggling. I've only got three broken legs. You know, I can carry on. Send Whittle off. He was breathing heavy.
But no, we haven't had anybody like that for ages, have we? And you think of the people that have been brought in, who have been built up to be like that, like Gerrard and all that lot. Absolutely not fit to be on the same planet, much less the same football pitch, are they?
And Paul Cook was right, wasn't he, ages ago, wasn't he? You always need an enforcer.
You
know, that's the reason why he signed Ian Evatt. You know, we couldn't run anymore when he signed him in 2013. There was doubts about his knees and whatnot and everything. But Paul Cook realised that he needs somebody like Ian Evatt, didn't he? And, you know, and he managed to get him. And look what happened. You know, it was a perfect signing for that perfect time, wasn't it, for the second time around.
And as Stuart's just sort of said about McCourt, he got Ryan and Morsi.
Exactly. Yeah.
Of him doing all the legwork, you know, and clearly Ian Evatt. Congratulations to him. I don't think any of your Stato pals, Stuart, have ever worked out if anybody's got promotion from the National League and followed it by promotion from old level Division 4 with different clubs. That must be something that doesn't happen all that often.
No, very true. Yeah.
So, there's a chance of it happening with the same club, but the chance of it happening with two different clubs, and especially a club like Bolton that were like Portsmouth when Cookie went to Portsmouth, that they were only on the way down, a bit like when James Rowe came to Chesterfield. That you've got to not only turn them round, you've got to point them in the right direction at a pace because they're the clubs that demand that level. So well done, Evo and co there. Looked a really terrific job that he's done at a car crash of a club at the point that he went in there.
Global, he's a leader, Phil, isn't he?
And yes.
You know, you need one. You need his influence on the pitch. You need it in the dressing room. Clearly, you know, we all saw the social media clips going around the weekend. The rest of the players obviously respect him enormously. Mm. He's different. And at this level, somebody with his will to win and drive to pass on to other players around you, it's a rare quality. It's a rare quality.
Yeah. And talking about passing things on to players, it was a little bit of a surprise when Danny Webb came in, Paul, as the first team coach. You know, obviously George Foster, assistant manager, and a manager, assistant manager and coach is no unusual thing.
No.
But you know, Roe had been operating from coming in without that position right through until, you know, whether it was the defeats against Hartlepool and Torquay back to back that did something about it, because he came in, I think, Woking the next game was his first game at the club, Paul, and I think that's helped to lighten the load as well, and probably be one of the reasons that Chesterfield have finished with a one drawn 1-1.
Yeah, I think that it said it was a bit of a shrewd move, wasn't it? Look, Chesterfield's a bigger club than Gloucester City, isn't it? There's more admin to be done, isn't there? And there's more things to take on the training pitch. And maybe there's a bigger squad as well. So to delegate another bit of a job and to bring in a first-team coach like that, who's got the same probably ideas as James Rowe. So, you know, we can go back to experience for George Foster, but he maybe just needed something a little bit different. So it's been certainly a good shrewd investment, hasn't it, into the coaching staff there. And I think it's worked very well. So, yeah, good move that from James Rowe. And just somebody else to have a shoulder to sort of lean on as well.
And I did ask him, Stuart, before the match at Woking, I did ask him a quiz question, which was, can you remember who you made your league debut against? And he couldn't, and it was against Chesterfield. He came on as a last-minute substitute. He'd played in cup games for Southend before that. His dad, Dave, was the manager at Southend at the time. But he couldn't remember he made his league debut against Chesterfield. But the only other game he ever played against Chesterfield was when one Nathan Abbey booted the ball from Bobby Zamora,
yeah,
booted
Zamora,
the ball,
yeah.
Nathan Abbey, and he said, oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
But yeah, and when you look at his back catalogue, he was the number two to Justin Edinburgh at Leighton Orient,
wasn't he? Yeah, when they went up, yeah,
time. And I asked James Rowe, and he said, you know, after Justin Edinburgh passed away, I think Danny Webb sort of was very, very close to him and sort of moved away from Orient on the back of that as much as anything. He did have a very short spell as caretaker manager. But, you know, it was the disappointment, I think, of that. And then, so he felt he needed to move on to get a new lease of life. Yeah. Coached at quite a few decent club academies.
Might have our own sort of replacement waiting in the wings if Everton get in touch about their vacancy.
Potentially well be. But, yeah, we're talking about getting into the playoffs, but a few weeks ago, with that showing at Hartlepool particularly, and then Torquay at home, it looked a tough ask after we were all looking at the top three, having beaten Kings Lynn to make it five on the bounce. You know, it shows how quickly it can change. And you know, James Rowe, the same as most managers, has always been one about the next match. But at that point, like all of us, he was sort of saying it's about securing the playoff as quickly as possible and trying to get in that top four or five to make sure you get a home game. And perhaps everybody associated with the club were counting the chickens a little bit too early, Darrell.
I think so. I mean, I was shocked how bad we were in that first half at Hartlepool. Everybody said how well they played, and they did, but they played how I've seen Hartlepool play most of the season. And we were faffing about at the back. We were being pressured, so instead of going long and then trying to play in their half, we just kept being robbed of the ball. And we were second to everything, weren't we, all over the pitch. It was it looked like a game too far. They'd obviously had a rest as well. We'd been playing Saturday, Tuesday for God knows how long. We'd racked up even more injuries. And we looked like a shadow of the side. And you thought, maybe we'd been found out here. In fairness to him, when he changed the shape at half time and we started playing a bit more direct and got the ball in their half, they didn't look very clever. Now, easy to say they've taken the foot off the gas. But their form would indicate since that they haven't been very good either, have they? So maybe it was just a one-off half, but it was a bit of a shock to the system. Wasn't quite what we expected, was it?
And that was immediately followed, Stuart, by the home defeat against Torquay United, who... again, they've sort of gone into, I think they've drawn their last five games, haven't they? They might have only lost one in 11, but they've not won one in five. Of course, Torquay were going hell for leather, thinking they could still win the league. Those two games made it look as though, well, we're probably not going to get there now.
We just looked as though we'd played ourselves out completely, didn't we? Hartlepool and then Torquay straight afterwards. You came away from it thinking, well, you know, you've had a good go, but there you are. You know, it was obviously too much with, as Daryl says, the, you know, playing twice a week for as long as we had to and all of that. And you start to think, oh, well, perhaps there's a benefit in not being in the playoffs, because if we were to get to Wembley and lose, we've like got to, you know, you go away for a long weekend and then you're back for pre-season training and you haven't built your squad and all of that sort of thing. So if we're not going to do it, let's be out of them straight to begin with. And that's fine. And then we go and win four and draw one and get in the blessed things, you know.
And of course, the two contrasts in that run were Wealdstone at home and Dagenham and Redbridge at home, weren't they? Mm. Wealdstone playing the unformed team. Previous win was the year before Chesterfield FC was founded. And Dagenham and Redbridge, who'd won their previous 73 games on the bounce. And of course, a great performance against Dagenham. And I wouldn't call it a woeful performance against Wealdstone, but it was an under par performance against Wealdstone, wasn't it, Steve?
It was sort of measured, wasn't it, really, in a sense that it didn't... We seemed to be a team that might have been a bit scared of the consequences of losing it, rather than, you know, sort of straight focused on going out and winning it, perhaps. I don't recall very much of the game at either end that was worthy of sort of criticism. It just seemed to be, it was almost the kind of game that you could have watched Chesterfield play almost at any critical point in their history, wasn't it? When, you know, we got to beat these people to stay up or to get in the playoffs or to go up or whatever. And it's always usually a disappointing 0-0, you know, and then that's it for another season. But
the one thing that came out of it, Daz, was the end of the argument of Smith versus Montgomery. That's not to say that Smith's better than Montgomery or Montgomery's better than Smith, but it was Montgomery deserves his place in this side because he made those two absolutely terrific saves near the end, didn't he? One of them was a real worldie.
Yeah, he's proved very reliable, as was Smith. I don't quite know what Smith might have done to have lost his place, to be honest, because he had a belter at Bromley when they were chucking the kitchen sink at us in the last 10 minutes. He gave them the goal, admittedly, but after that, God, he made up for it. And he looked a really decent keeper. I think we mentioned last time the best keeper we've had since Tommy, but in fairness to James Montgomery, who had a couple of games earlier on, didn't he?
Yeah, he came in for the one game.
Halifax, was it?
Yeah, Halifax.
Yeah.
Two of the fans were kind of blaming him for the defeat, which I never quite saw, to be honest. But he's been very composed, comes and plays the ball. He sounds quite vocal. You might know better, Phil, having been in the grounds more than us. But, either or at the minute, I think we're very fortunate. The other thing about the Torquay game and the Wealdstone game was we had chances and we had them in the first 10, 15 minutes. And at this level, if you don't take that chance, you leave yourselves wide open. And I know that's
hit the bar.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. You know, goals change games, but I think even more so at this level, goals change games.
Yeah.
And we've not been a first half side at all season, really. I think we scored a very early goal at Wilston and went on to lose a penalty. Yeah. Tom Denton's penalty when Tyson got injured. Then we've scored, I think, against Wrexham, and was it Bromley 9 and 10 minutes? We've only scored two goals all season inside the first 10 minutes. If you include the 10th minute, we scored three. And for the amount of times that we've come out of the blocks quite quickly, that's not a good return, Paul, is it?
No, that's not. That's I don't know. It's something to be looked at, or a bit of luck in that. We need to be more clinical in that respect, I think, as well, because as it happens, it's cost us 2 points, hasn't it, against Wilton. Now, obviously, on the face of it, that's going to look like a good point going into the playoffs, of course, but did it cost us a home tie for later on? So, but it's there or thereabouts, isn't it, really? I think that Hartlepool game was so disappointing, though, really, going back to it, wasn't it, really? You know, live on television. You know, we've done wonders to get even into that position, and then to chuck in a performance like that really, really sort of upset the apple cart, didn't it? Really, and didn't make us darlings of BT Sport. I can say that some of the commentators as well weren't particularly impressed by that, and that might trigger onto to Saturdays as well. But I don't know. We shall see about that anyway with the Partizan crowd, but more about that in a bit, I'm sure. But if we get into that position anyway, we all said that we were going to get into the playoffs, so I don't know what we're worried about. Although I didn't expect it to be from an 80 or 79th minute winner, though, did you, on the last
day?
No,
and you know, I've got a pal who's a Halifax fan who said some weeks ago, you know, it could be the decider, and it was, we'll be in them by then. Yeah. But of course, all that in the backdrop of injuries. We've talked about the long-term ones with Asante and Hollis before, but you know, Kerr joined in the list, and we've had times with Taylor and Whittle out, and Weston's been in and out, hasn't he? It's been fairly disruptive on the injury front, and I know everybody gets them, but there was Tom Denton right at the start of the season. There's not many people who'll have played a great chunk of the season without their top scorer and second top scorer through long-term injuries. That's very unusual. And with your two enforcer defenders, Gunning's been in and out, playing through the pain barrier, but Hollis as well. And then to have lost Kerr, we lost him twice for the season, didn't he? Only he recovered about 2 days, and then came back, and he was out with a nasty injury. So to do it in that, okay, people say, well, but Rose signed 18, 19 different players or whatever it was. But it's the key nature, it's that spine, isn't it? You know, when Weston doesn't play in the National League for Chesterfield, we don't win.
Yeah.
And when neither Gunning nor Hollis is there, we haven't got anybody who can play to the level that they do that enforcer role. Yeah. So well done the squad as a whole. And people like Yarny and Evans coming in, who everybody had written off,
and doing
their bits.
Hmm. Yeah, it's full credit to them, isn't it? Really, you think about, Gunning it slotting into that position, just taking over from Hollis, really, in that sort of middle of the park. You know, either he's got Evans to the right or Kerr, but Kerr's a big loss, isn't it? Really, and I know he's out of contract to the end of the season. Whether we can sort of negotiate for him for next year, not too sure, but. That was a blow. I thought that one was really going to hit his chances. But credit to Yarny, he came in, didn't he, for a couple of games, stepped in, but has not reappeared since that Hartlepool game. And it's Evans, really, that's taken up. And we're down to it. That's it now, isn't it? Because it doesn't look like young Sharman's going to get a look in at all, does it? So that's it. We're really down to the bare bones. There's only one option of playing centre-half now is Carlin coming in to play, and then you're going to find somebody at right back then, haven't you, really? That it'll have to be McCourt, won't it? And so that's the dilemma they've got. We really are down to the bare bones defensively.
Yeah, and to be fair, McCourt did a real good job at Woking, wasn't it, when for the injury, and actually did look pretty good in that role. Bearing in mind he'd hardly played, he's somebody we didn't mention on the injury front. He'd hardly played as well at all, hadn't he? So yeah, there has been that. But George Carline is the one position that you can't think. With a fully fit squad, even with a fully fit squad, there isn't a natural replacement for him. There is for everybody else. They might be out injured, the natural replacements, or even the natural first choice. But there's no cover for Carline at all as a right back or a right wing back.
No.
And what a season he's had. Absolutely phenomenal season. And virtually played every minute. It was only that Solihull red card that meant he was suspended against Solihull. and he just about played everything else since. And he was all strapped up, wasn't he, against Dagenham, really struggling towards the end when Gunning couldn't walk and Whittle couldn't walk until he went off, and Weston was struggling. So, you know, he just seems to be a metronome to me. I can't remember seeing a player with an engine on like him for a long time.
No. And I think, Phil, we're actually in a fortunate position this year where the playoffs would normally, the eliminated was normally being midweek. So we'd have played them tonight, in fact, you know, and then have to play the Torquay or whoever on Saturday or Sunday. You know, it would have been that. So it would have been a short turnaround. That's the negative of finishing in sixth and seventh place in the table. So you don't get the fully. But fortunately, we've got a week and then another week and then another week. So your Gunnings and Carlines and everybody can rest an ice bath and whatnot for a week and, you know, just rest up their bones. So we're really lucky this year that we're going to be in that situation.
And Stuart, going into potentially three games not at our own on our own grass, we've actually picked up more points away from home this season than at home. So that should be something that shouldn't worry us. Although, of course, there will be home fans for Notts County and Torquay if we do make it through to Plainmoor. But, yeah, the away record, 11 wins this season, is right up there, 94-95 12, which is...
It's only been bettered once, hasn't it, in all our time. And I think it's only been equaled once or twice as well. We are good away from home.
In Rose time... It's 10 wins from 17 away matches. 57.5% win rate on away matches.
Yeah, it's phenomenal, isn't it, really? And, you know, I'd probably sooner have these games away than at home. Home is supposed to be an advantage and not so rewarded with that. But when you look at our away record, there's something about the way that we set ourselves up to go and play away that makes us rather more successful than most clubs can expect to be.
Well, our record against the five teams above us this season, at home, played five, lost five. And away, we've won at Notts County and Sutton. So that's the other three. So it wasn't anything to do with 0-0 against Willesden, losing badly at Maidenhead. It was that we picked up 6 points out of a possible 30 against the top five teams. We've just fallen short against the best. Against the best, we've only won away matches.
I suppose it might be a bit intimidating. I don't know. I mean, County's fans are mostly decent people that, you know, tend not to intimidate. It's the same as Halifax. I mean, I know there's only 800 of them there, but you can't really be intimidated by people talking in that wonderfully sort of marshmallow West Yorkshire accent, can you?
I went to the Chesterfield FC Women's Cup Final in the Trevor Clifton Trophy and spent quite a bit of time with one of the co-vice chairmen, Martin Thacker. And he said they felt quite intimidated at Halifax. When they cheered when Chesterfield scored, he said, oh, it was quite intimidating.
Wow. It's a big old ground just to have 800 people rattling about in, isn't it? Absolutely, yes.
Failed in extra time, and unfortunately today they've heard that their application for promotion, because the curtail season meant that it wasn't done on the par, has been turned down, but I don't think they've completely given up yet, so let's hope they manage to find something there, because the team that I lost to, Lincoln United, they were the last team that beat Chesterfield in November 2019, so you know they deserve to go up. They awarded a spot in the higher division. But still, there's still a battle to be had and to progress. And I was talking to quite a few of the management team after the game. To progress, you've got to have close games like that week after week after week, winning 2-3 and 4-5 nil every week. You're not going to progress.
No. Saturday, do we know what the capacity is at Meadow Lane? Do we know?
Well, I think I've seen somewhere, but I'm not going to swear to it. I'm sure all our listeners are shouting that they were entitled to sell 4,400 tickets or something like that.
Which in a big old place like that, it is going to rattle about again, isn't it? Perhaps it's.
Well, I mean, they're more likely to get on their own players back, Notts County fans, than they are Chesterfield's. You know, so the more pressure I think is heaped on them. They finished the higher up. You know, we just scraped in. So
yeah,
you know, we've got all these injuries. We've got the excuses lined up straight away anyway. So you know, and I think that. No, heap the pressure back onto them. They're a allegedly bigger club, so let them have it all. So
we've played two away games this season in front of fans. We've been the champions in front
of
fans.
Won them both, haven't we? Yeah,
we won at a team who had to win to get into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So you know, they were both sort of one-sided atmospheres, and we won in front of our own fans as well. Yeah. So crowds is good.
This
season, no question about it.
Can't be many seasons where we've won every single game that we've played in front of spectators, can there?
Absolutely. Well, as long as we can maintain that record for the rest of the season, that will be a good one to note down somewhere in an appendix. So, looking forward to Notts County. What sort of game, Daz, are you expecting? You know, We would have beaten Notts County twice this season had the games finished on 90 minutes. But as it happened, we lost one and won one, won away from home. Mad Gav's free kick. And then it wasn't the end of John Pemberton, because whereas I'm sure people think it was, of course, John Dunworth was caretaker manager for the Notts County game when we were 2-1 up on 90 and lost 3-2. So what sort of game are you expecting? Because they've got their injury problems as well.
They do. I've seen him quite a lot on BT and other things. He never impressed me. He certainly didn't impress me at our place, because we were poor and we almost beat him with no confidence at all. I mean, confidence was zero when we played them. That manager just left, etc., etc. A side more or less cobbled together, a formation cobbled together. And then when we went down there, coming off the back of yet another COVID break, to be honest, we gave them a tactical and a football lesson. And it may only have been Mad Gav's sort of free kick that deceived the keeper. But we had 5, 6, 7, 8 chances and could have scored 3 in the last 5 minutes. So I haven't seen anything at all, either against us or watching them play other teams, about Notts that worries me in the slightest, except are we fit? And that is the only, if we're fit, if he can get his first game such as it is on the pitch and they last the 90 minutes, I have absolutely no doubt we win the game.
And Paul, you know, their two leading scorers, Ruben Rodriguez and Carl Wotton, both scored in that 3-2. Victory, if I remember. It's about looking after them. Now, Wotton's hardly had a kick. I know he did score in that, but in the two games, yeah, he's been marshalled pretty well, hasn't he? Notts County fans aren't the biggest Ruben Rodriguez fans. I think Chesterfield fans rated more than a lot of County fans. So, you know, if you can keep those two quiet, you know, they've got Baldwin and Kelly Evans that are pretty good down the flanks, but, you know, The engine that Whittle or Taylor and Carline have got should at least make it difficult for them to get crosses in on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's going to be an interesting clash of styles, maybe. Different manager, of course, for the two games. that Notts have got, who started off pretty poorly and then went on an unbelievable run, didn't he, to cement their place with one game to go in the playoffs. So, you know, but although they've sort of lost last time to Bromley, didn't they, who seemed to want it more a little bit, maybe they were thinking of the playoffs. I'm not too sure. But it'd be interesting to see how, as Daryl says, interesting to see how we can get through this game, this week, 90 minutes, the possibility of extra time in penalties. So, you know, is it going to stretch us a little bit? Are we on sort of, are we running on fumes right now? You know, having got, you know, just crept into it, we'll find out on 6 o'clock on Saturday or not. But it's going to be an intriguing game, I think. There isn't too much to separate the two sides, I don't think.
No, absolutely right. And like I say, they've got their injury problems, and the same as well in midfield, in O'Brien and Doyle. They've got people top side of 30. Doyle's 39. O'Brien, I think he's 32, 33, something along those lines. So, you know, the likes of young Jack Clark might give them a real hard time. But they've got a fairly set defence, haven't they? Rawlinson has been at the heart of their back line all season and played most of the games. So, you know, it is intriguing, Stuart, isn't it? It's an intriguing matchup.
Yes, it certainly is. My goodness, it's hard to pick a winner, I think. You know, and that's a great compliment to ourselves, I think, that even after all that we've been through, you know, sort of only waking up until after we played 9 or 10 games and then, you know, sort of all the bits dropping off in the last few games of the season that we've seen, to still be there is just fantastic, really. But it is going to be, it may not particularly be hard, but it's difficult to sort of know how we're going to go about doing it, you know, against all the players that you mentioned. They've got some good players in that team, and the manager seems to be a thoughtful sort of chap, doesn't he? You know, tactically astute.
Yeah, you know, both under 40, aren't they? The two managers, managers. Birchnell done his apprenticeship in Scandinavia, hasn't he? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, obviously he's got different ideas picked up in a different environment, and yes, like you said, Stuart, it seemed to be a few weeks before Notts County got it. But when they did get it, they've done pretty well.
And just knocked out of the trophy, weren't they? But sorry,
yeah, go on. Yeah, and what you were saying, Paul, about the game against Bromley, whether they were just concentrated on the playoffs. Well, their team seemed pretty strong. I looked at the team that they played, and you know, it was, wouldn't have been a surprise if they'd have needed to have won against to make the playoffs. There was no mass changes.
No, and what they needed to do, they had to win it or do it in their own hands to confirm a home spot. In the end, they relied on other results to get into that position. Yeah. It's not exactly what the manager wanted. So, you know, maybe there's a little chink in the armour there. But I don't think we've got anything to fear in particular. Look, we're going to be the underdogs going into it. You know, that's how it is. So, you know, it's just whether we can, you know, battle down the hatches and try and get through it, be it extra time penalties or whatever. Because I think personally it's going to go that far. So I think it's going to be one of those heart-stopping type of things, I'm afraid.
And assuming everybody who was available last week is available again this week, would you go in unchanged? Would you have Whittle in for Taylor? Would you bring Whelan in or McCourt?
I'd definitely have Whittle in. Away, you were talking about, they like to get crosses into the box. When we played down there, we stopped every cross getting into the box by playing Carline on one side, and I think, I'm sure it was Whittle on the other. And I think he'll do exactly the same thing again. First job is to stop them playing, and then we impose our game on them. And I think you made a good point, Paul. If we think this pressure on a Chesterfield manager to get up, it's tenfold at Notts. Yeah. They think they've got a divine right, like we all do when we come down. And I happen to stumble across, I don't know if you've ever come across it, a Notts County talk off or something.
Notts County Mad, is it?
No, it was like a podcast or something that I stumbled across the other day. And they were all saying, oh, Notts this, Notts that, Notts the other. And one of the guys said, Yeah, I'm really not worried about it. But if you remember back when Chesterfield came here, that was the worst Notts played all season. Now, that did we have a bad day, or were Chesterfield that good tactically?
Yeah.
And I think we were that good tactically.
Yes, yeah, so at the time, it was we were that good and stopped them playing. They couldn't believe how good we were.
Yeah. And the manager noted that, Neil Ardley, at the time as well, afterwards. Yes. He said they gave us a tactical masterclass, in other words.
Yeah.
You know, so,
yeah.
You know, that's what they did. So, you know, maybe that's they put shoved in their worst performance, but maybe. But I definitely think it was Chesterfield that forced the issue there.
Yeah. And interesting. Danny Rowe. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Dananga had a very good game down there, playing up front with Asante. Dananga ran his socks off and ran their back three all over the place.
Yeah.
Maybe he gives him an hour. I don't know.
Well, I think personally it'll be... Rowe seems to like playing in that lone striker role where he's got runners either side coming in and whatnot, so I think that he seems to prefer that. I know he drops deep again, but allows Clark and Mandeville to push further forward. If he's not quite working after 60, then there's Tyson, or as you say, perhaps even Dananga, if he can make the bench, that is, really. I think that would be the perfect scenario. I think Rowe's got something in him there which can make a goal out of nothing.
Yeah, so. Whittle for Taylor, the only change for me from the start.
I agree with Whittle going. He seems more solid. You remember Taylor at Hartlepool got run ragged in that first half, didn't he? So,
well, he's tactically taken Taylor off twice at half-time. Hartlepool away, Halifax away. There's a bit of an away theme there where the home team are just pushing on that little bit more. And Taylor has been fantastic in some of the home games.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. And, of course, you know, when was the last time we were thinking that Liam Mandeville would have a nailed-on position in the starting 11? You know, he's earned that from last week, hasn't he?
And definitely,
he will be on the. Oh, the manager said I've got a future at this club last week post match at Halifax. So it's potentially his last opportunity to achieve that, isn't it?
I wonder whether he might go a little bit more solid, put Clark on the bench and put McCourt in. No, just to sort of shoulder things in the middle of the park if he wants to do that, and you know, just allow a little bit more freedom. But of course, it stops an extra body going forward. But we know Jack McCourt likes to go forward, doesn't he? But not as much as Clark does.
Yeah, he's not got the mobility of the type of mobility of Clark and Mandeville, and I think it's that number 10 role that he likes, the double number 10. And it does seem to, Rose made it work when he was trying that earlier in the season. I don't think it was working. But it works when Rowe's there.
Yeah,
I
agree. I think Danny, it brings out the best in Danny Rowe, I think, with him as a lone striker with runners around him.
Mm.
So I certainly think that's where he's performs at best. So just shown by that goal in the opening goal against Dagenham.
No, absolutely, and the nerves of steel as well at the penalty.
Yeah.
Which, even at the time, we were all looking at the big screen and the clock. But it was almost next morning when I was thinking about writing my piece for the website that you realise how late it actually was.
Oh,
yeah. When you actually physically write 87 down or whatever. And we all knew there'd be plenty of additional time because it had taken 3 or 4 minutes for the penalty to get taken.
Yeah.
But it was, the nerves of steel with all of the antics from the Dagenham.
Yeah. And then he waits for all that to settle down and then goes and picks a ball up off of a cone, doesn't he?
Yes.
And goes back and puts it on the spot.
Yeah.
Anybody want to make any more?
He's just not bothered, is he? Yes. He's really good,
Very good.
No, and certainly isn't one for great celebrations. I think if Tina takes a photograph of him scoring the winner, celebrating scoring the winner at Notts County or even at Ashton Gate, I don't think there'll necessarily be something that makes it look like he's scoring the winner in a tie.
He's like in a world of his own, doesn't he?
Yeah,
he's like
he's playing
his own game.
Norton Lee must have smiled more when he cut the soap in half, I think.
that first goal he scored, actually, the Dagenham one, was him all over, having watched him in previous seasons. took up an intelligent position, didn't actually move, just stood still. Ball came to him, first touch killed it, second touch bottom corner, gone.
Yeah.
And with his wrong foot as well.
With his wrong foot.
I disagree slightly on that. I think his first touch, he was trying to get it onto his right foot. he killed it for his left foot, but I think he was trying to knock it onto his right foot. But he had the immediate thought to, well, I can kick left footed, so let's take it left footed, you know. So, but there was some really good running off the ball as well to create the space. Jack Clark did really well, didn't he, as well? He's, I can't believe that Jack Clark won't be at this football club next season.
But the only way is if he's anywhere higher, isn't it?
Yes.
Someone in League Two makes an offer.
Absolutely. And whilst, I don't want to particularly talk about, who'll go at the end of the season, because hopefully we've got another few games to go, but... the likes of Dinanga and Yusuf and Mitchell, I don't think have done what the manager would have hoped for. We talked about Kerr earlier on. He's only here for the rest of this season. Maybe he could be sort of given some sort of short term deal whilst he gets fit, and then see what see what it's like at that point in time. It'd be a big risk. Or a big bang on the budget, wouldn't he, to sign him up when Hollis and Asante are not going to be around until Christmas time or worse. So to have a third one in that's a long term, I just think he's unlucky. So, but obviously Rowe rates him, so it wouldn't surprise me if he gave him a 6-month deal on a get fit basis.
Yeah,
and we'll see where we are on January the 1st or something like that. I don't know, but. The big question, we've talked about Mandeville, and I think what the manager said last week, there's a good chance that he might still be here next year. But the big question is with Evans. Obviously he'll be at the top end of the pay scale, one would imagine, blown out, but come back in and done a really, really, really good job. So will the manager swallow his pride a little bit and give him an extension? Will Evans want to sign it if it's on a lower wage scale? Who knows? But I'd be tempted at this moment in time. I can see Daryl.
Sure.
It depends.
He's making notes.
I'm good to say that. To me, we'll get better value for money somewhere else.
That's what I say. It's about the pound notes, isn't it?
And judging by the players he's brought in at what we know or what reputedly is a lot lower cost, then I think he can find a better replacement for 11. And that's, it will come down to a degree to economics.
Yes.
What division we're in, and economics. But I think we do appreciate more now the value of a player than we've ever done. Now we've got some actually got National League nows.
Yeah, well, we need him, don't we? That's the thing. Right now, we need him.
Yeah.
And he's working his way into people's minds, albeit maybe not at Chesterfield, he's certainly putting performances for other clubs, maybe, that may want to take him up at the end of the season. So they know he's out of contract. Mm-hmm. So, there's another question as well. Montgomery, does he earn another deal, isn't it? So, because Grant Smith's here for next year. Now, Grant Smith was with the team on Saturday, wasn't he? I saw him on the pitch celebrating with the other players. So, we need another goalkeeper. Is Montgomery going to be getting another deal?
Well, I'd be perfectly happy if they were the two goalkeepers at Chesterfield next season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be my least worry, I think, for absolute sure. So, but anyway, we need to know what division we're in, first of all, don't we?
That's true, yes.
Yeah. Worrying about who we are. And of course, it's a massive difference that the Football League starts a couple of weeks earlier. It was only a couple of weeks off, I think, if we do make it. And I'm sure most of the players will be happy enough with that. But, it is a big difference for a number of reasons, pre-season reasons and level of football reasons. What division? But it sounds like the season tickets are going well, Daryl. You'll probably have a better insight than us. They seem to be rolling along pretty well.
Yeah, the word last week was that they were overwhelmed by how many they'd already sold, and the nearer we got to last Saturday, the more they were selling. So I can only imagine, God forbid, if we win again on Saturday, there'll be another one. So,
early bird to the end of the month, isn't it? And it has to be said, Stuart, as well, what a phenomenal job was done behind the scenes for that Dagenham and Redbridge match. And it ought to be a legal requirement of the powers that be to make sure there's people sitting in all four corners of the ground, because it felt a lot more than the 3,000 that were there, didn't it?
Everybody spread right
across the ground. It was phenomenal.
And there were obviously people who would normally be sat in a larger group on the cop who were in slightly smaller groups on each of the sides, you know, and that helped make such a difference. The people who worked behind the scenes to get that game on, absolute heroes, all of them. You know, I've done a bit of work on COVID safety and stuff like that with where I am, and it's not an easy thing to do. It's very demanding to get all that sort of stuff done properly, ready for when the guy comes around, you know, to say yay or nay. And they've all done a fantastic job, all the volunteers, all the people on the trust that have organised it, you know.
And
it's a real good community sort of thing now.
Yeah,
you know?
And
I don't want to go talking about all the old lot, but I venture to suggest that there might not have been that much cooperation from some, indeed, you know, from some of the fan base. Yeah. You know,
yeah, for some, substitute any, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know. But that's all behind us now, and that's all part, you know, that optimistic kind of rush that we have is all part of the success that we're enjoying at the moment as well, I think.
Yeah, but they say the stadium, Paul, looked absolutely magnificent as well, didn't it, really?
Yes, I only caught it on the stream, but it looked a picture, and the pitch looks magnificent, by the way. It's the back end of the season, because at one stage it was getting a bit ropey, so I don't know if whether they've increased the budget to move up to the next level of pitch preparation. I'm not sure, but you know, maybe they've gone from bronze to silver. I don't know, but it looked a real picture. It looked very, very good, and I agree with you. I think that all four stands having Chesterfield fans is magnificent. You know, you know, if Town are unfortunate next season to still be in the National League, then it should be a prerequisite that they all go in the in the corner and up yours the rest of the thingy.
If you could find a way to allow people to walk from one end to the other,
you know, like those used to. Days, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Just bung the away fans in that little corner of the east stand. You know, give everybody on the south stand a pass out to go and you know, run round the block and go in the north stand for the second half.
I never want to criticise the efforts of other clubs, but I was astounded that there were only 800 and whatever it was at Halifax.
Astounded.
A game that they could have got in the playoffs if they'd have won. They needed other things to get their way as well, but my word, you know, it's. And you could stand as well, for those who don't like seat. Now, you could stand.
And was that their first...
sell seated tickets, weren't they? But then they opened up...
And they got the end open, didn't they? Was that their first game with fans?
Yes.
Yeah, they were away the previous
week.
Well,
you'd have thought, even if they were bottom of the league or something, you'd have thought people would have wanted to come out, wouldn't you?
Yeah, they'd be Maidenhead away, I think, the previous week, when Maidenhead had a guy sent off, didn't they? If I remember. Mm. But yeah, that said, they made a great noise.
No.
But when I saw my position, we were unfortunately inside and you couldn't see the main stand. You couldn't see how many people were in it. Mm-hmm. So at the end, Adam Collins, the Spire Arts police guy, was walking past and I asked him if he'd heard the crowd and he said it was 800 and something. I thought, what?
Yeah.
I know in the old days, Halifax always used to get 1,002. Still re-election, and they never wanted to go sub 1,000.
Yeah, we've had 1,001 up there watching us.
Of late, they've been getting more decent crowds than that, and I was very surprised that was all it was. And they were allowed to sell a lot more tickets than that. It wasn't that was the limit of tickets. They could have sold 2,000. So really surprised.
On
that, so such is life. So okay, well, we are recording this during the first half of England against Austria, And Paul sort of said, well, we need to see at least the second half, don't we? So we better wrap up with a prediction for Notts County. And I'll just point out that a couple of our successful journeys in history have involved matches at Notts County. Of course, winning the Anglo-Scottish Cup there with Alan Crawford's last minute of extra time, little back heel flick. And our first match of the successful 2011-12 Johnston Pate Trophy was a 3-1 victory, Meadow Lane. So Meadow Lane and success have gone hand in hand before. So predictions. Who shall we go to first? Who looks as though they're not trying to catch my eye? Paul.
Well, I've sort of said what I think it'll go, haven't I? I think it'll be 0-0, extra time, Chesterfield win on penalties. That's what I'm going to go for.
Fourth successful shootout of the season.
Yes.
And then get kicked out, isn't it?
Yeah.
Stuart. Yeah.
I think, well, you've got to say we're going to win, aren't you? And I think we'll win it in normal time, and it'll probably be 1-0.
Yeah, I'd go with exactly
second
the same
half
scenario
goal.
As that.
Goal halfway through the second half.
We don't do first half.
We don't, no. What is it? 4 in the last 14 we've scored in the first half.
And Daryl is going to be the last predictor.
Oh, dear. We're going to win the game. We're going to win it quite comfortably. 3-1.
Oof. 3-1.
Two for Mr. Rowe. I don't mean the one that's in the stands. Hopefully two for Danny Rowe and one for the old man Tyson against his old club.
Oh. Yes, of course, we never mentioned the touchline ban, have we, my word?
No.
Oh, well, out of time.
So, well, I hope you've enjoyed the podcast. I'd love to think that we'll be back for another one before the season's finished, and we might even mention a Euro or something. Paul's got his hand up.
I was just going to say, obviously we'll do if we manage to get through, I would think that we'd be available for another one next week.
Yeah.
Previewing the possibility
it would
of
be
an
unlucky
extra,
not
so,
to.
Yeah, but we also might find out. We might have to do one anyway because we also might find out the retained list and yeah. whatnot. So
we'll
be back
as soon as we're not in it anymore, won't we?
Yeah.
Either not in it because we've won it, or not in it because we've not won it.
Yeah.
But I will fess up. Straight away, I will end the podcast with a fess. I confess, I have booked a hotel in Turkey.
All right,
but
that's done it. That's done it. Then that's torn it.
Stay for a couple of days, and it just so happens.
All right,
to be in the Turkey vicinity. Okay? So, but I have booked Friday and Saturday night in Turkey.
Well, it's a very nice holiday destination, isn't it, Phil?
It is, yes, yes.
Yes, so some good will come out of it, because if it wouldn't have been for the players, I wouldn't have booked the weekend away in Turkey. And I tell you what, flipping heck, I looked at the price of Travel Lodge, and they wanted £245 for two nights in Travel Lodge. I've stayed at the Turkey one before, I won't pay anywhere near that for that. So we've upgraded to a nice hotel that you pay a reasonable amount of money to, but you feel as though it's the right job. Yeah, my problem then, if we don't get there. All right, guys, so thanks as ever to Stuart and Paul and Daryl and me, Phil. And do you know what? Who'd have thought this after we played Notts County last time? I didn't. Cheers.
And if you like this podcast, then don't forget to subscribe. Please rate and review us on Spotify, Apple and Google Podcasts, and many of your favourite podcast providers.
It's a glorious victory at Chesterfield.